We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Welcome, everyone. This is Christine Fox with CETA, and we are excited for you to participate today in our Students Leverage Technology Tools and Makerspaces to Personalize Learning. And we're really excited to have the opportunity to hear from a group of students from St. Albans City Schools, Vermont. This school was chosen as CETA's Student Voices winner for 2018. And hopefully you've seen the question in the chat. We'd love to know not only where you're from, but also what your role is. Are you a teacher, an administrator? Do you have a group of students with you? They're really helpful. We encourage you to use the chat today to ask questions and post comments. We do have a community in EdWeb on Student Voice, and it's edweb.net/studentvoice. So this webinar and all of the resources related to it will be posted in that webinar room, in that space, and there's also opportunity to dialogue with others and view other webinars that included Student Voice. So we encourage you to log into EdWeb and join that community. So as I mentioned, I'm Christine Fox, the Deputy Executive Director with CETA, and I will share more about CETA and our organization and the event in just a moment. And today with us, we have Grace Borse. She is one of the innovation specialists at St. Albans City School. She was instrumental in the application and the development of this presentation, as well as the students' in-person presentation about a month ago. She has the opportunity to collaborate among classes at St. Albans, where technology is truly a seamless part of the day. And today, she's going to be able to share kind of the vision that they have at the school. And we also have a group of students with us, and you can see them in the background. So we have Annabelle Peak, Duffy Smith, Elliot De Solores, and then Mackenzie Smith, Alexis Laferna, and I apologize for the pronunciation. And then we have Amelia Pickham. Sorry about that. And they can share their proper pronouncing when they introduce themselves. So again, today we'll be talking about students leveraging technology tools and makerspaces to personalize learning experiences. So truly, I'm just going to give a short overview of CETA and our Student Voices Award, and then the bulk of the time will be dedicated to the students' presentation. So those of you not familiar, CETA was established in 2001. We are a nonprofit membership organization that serves and represents United States and their territories' state digital learning leaders. We support those leaderships of the Department of Ed through advocacy efforts, professional learning opportunities, collaboration between states, partnerships between public and private sector, as well as federal and state relations. So you may be wondering, who is a CETA member? So we have different relationships with different groups of folks. So we do have state leaders, all 50 states plus DC, Virgin Islands, and Guam, and American Samoa participate with CETA, and their SEA establishes the membership, and then the SEA chooses who participates in CETA. In addition, we have a membership through an affiliate program, and we collaborate with four levels of affiliates: statewide or regional membership associations, higher education, international, and district affiliates. And then finally, we have our private sector partners. These are both for-profit and nonprofit organizations that are aligning with our mission and priorities. And through those partnerships, our members learn about new and emerging technologies. They provide feedback and input to those emerging technologies and better understand the public side of things, and then they also share what's going on within their states. CETA provides multiple resources, and each year we publish a variety of resources depending on certain initiatives that we're working on. Here are an example of several. We have an online portal that highlights all state policies around instructional materials, the DMAPs, which is listed first here. We also have published annually We've had three versions of this report, and we're actually working on the 2019 version, Navigating the Digital Shift. So talking about how students move from paper to digital instructional materials. We host the Transformative Digital Learning Guide, and this is an online tool where you can get to know all there is about considerations when shifting to digital learning or implementing digital learning opportunities. We also have a series of resources around Wi-Fi and broadband access and implementation in schools. All of our resources are available on our website at no cost, and they are also openly licensed. So a little bit about our student voices. Each year, CETA honors one group of students from a K-12 school or district that's leveraged technology to impact student learning. We started this initiative about 11 years ago. And since then, at our annual leadership summit in the fall in the Washington, D.C. area, we host a group of students that will present in front of about 250 state and national education leaders. So these students in the school are awarded the L.C. Brownback Travel Scholarship. So they're able to travel to D.C. and we try to incorporate some time so they can visit their policymakers on Capitol Hill and also enjoy the nation's capital. You can learn more about student voices on our website. And this year, in addition to our winner, we had four finalists. So the other finalists were from districts around the country. And they listed here were from highlighting of various types of programs, the Effingham County CEO program in Indiana, focused on providing high school students opportunity to do like business internship, Meadow Park Middle School in Oregon. We also had Amarillo Public Schools from Arkansas, and they actually had a leader come to our leadership summit and present on a panel as well. So we encourage you to read more about those finalists on our website. And for those of you from districts, we encourage you to connect with your state leader that's a CETA member, and perhaps you will be nominated in the future. We want to thank AT&T Aspire for their participation and their support of the Student Voices for 2018. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about AT&T. They invest in education and job training to create skilled and diverse workforce that powers our country for the future. Technology is making it easier for everyone, regardless of age, gender, income, or geography, to learn anytime, anywhere. Through AT&T Aspire Initiative, AT&T brings together the power of its networks, its employees, its technology, and organizations to connect people to opportunities through education and job training. Since 2008, AT&T Aspire has committed $450 million to programs to help millions of students in all 50 states and around the world. And you can learn more about AT&T Aspire and their programs that are both school district-based programs, and it may be something that your school or district is interested in learning more about. So I'm going to turn it over to the stars of the show. I have every confidence that we will not only enjoy their presentations, but learn a lot. Their colleagues presented at CETA's Leadership Summit in early November, and they knocked it out of the park. And we are proud to have another group of St. Albans City Schools students here. And I want to personally thank Grace Borst, not only for preparing and traveling with a group of students in November, but now working and preparing these students for today. So we're excited to hear more about the different learning opportunities that students at your school have.
All right. Thank you so much, Christine. My name is Grace Borst, and I'm one of the innovation specialists here at St. Albans City School. I'd like to thank CETA and EdWeb for allowing us this opportunity and for all of you for attending this webinar. I have six very excited and very energetic students here with me today, and I'd like to take a moment to have them introduce themselves and tell us a little bit more about them.
My name's Amelia Pinkham. I'm in fifth grade. My favorite subject in school is reading and writing, and my favorite subject out of school is soccer and swimming.
Hi, my name is Annabelle Peak. I'm in fourth grade. My favorite subject in school is reading and writing. My favorite thing to do out of school is acting and cheerleading.
Hi, my name is Duffy Smith, and I'm fourth grade. My favorite thing to do in school is art and lunch and recess. My favorite thing to do out of school is hockey and baseball.
I'm Elliot Delorier. I'm in fourth grade. My favorite subject in school is art. My favorite thing to do outside of school is sit by the computer, watch the computer, drink hot chocolate, and pet the dog with my feet.
I'm Kenzie Smith. I'm in sixth grade. And my favorite thing to do in school is reading and writing. And my favorite things to do out of school is acting, hockey, eating, and sleeping.
Hey, my name is Alexis Lafreniere. My favorite thing to do in school is art or science. My favorite thing to do out of school is swim team or lacrosse.
All right, thank you all for sharing. Before I have the students come up and tell us a little bit more about their projects, we would like you to know a little bit more about St. Albans City School. In order to do that, we have a short video for you to watch or listen to. And this video was created by some of our 7th and 8th grade students.
St. Albans is a community. There's a St. Albans city and town. The city is 7,200 people, or residents, and the town is about 5,700 residents. The city is a whole within the donut, and the town is the donut itself. We're located in the northwest portion of Vermont, 1 hour from Montreal, and we have the surrounding area is a huge dairy community. St. Albans has been there's been a revitalization in St. Albans with the downtown streetscape, and we've added a parking garage, hotel, and many other improvements to make St. Albans a better place to live. St. Albans is known as a walking community. Many individuals can walk from where they live in St. Albans to the library, the movies, downtown, to restaurants, to shopping center, drugstore, post office. So we're a walkable community.
At St. Albans City School, we have 13 different learning communities. A learning community is a group of 20 through 60 students spanning 2 to 3 grade levels. Our communities are focused on pre-K and kindergarten, first grade through third grade, fourth grade through sixth grade. 7th and 8th grade make up our oldest communities. All in all, there are around 800 kids in our school. Our school was founded in 1968 and at the time consolidated several neighborhood schools to be one of the biggest elementary schools in the state. This year we will be celebrating our 50-year anniversary. Our school has seen many changes over its storied history. One of the major changes that has occurred in the past several years is the development of stewardship projects. Each learning community has a stewardship project they've been working on for approximately 6 years. Our projects are focused on gardens, trees, food, education, the environment, and community involvement. We have a lot of technology in our school. Our grades 1 through 8 students all have one-to-one access to Chromebooks. We use Google tools daily and collaborate with our peers and our teachers. Our younger students have access to tablets as well. We have a makerspace that includes 3D printers, laser cutters, and many more cool tools to help us complete our projects. Our school offers clubs and classes in robotics, coding, Minecraft, 3D art, video production, and more. Technology is a very important part of our school day.
Use technology every day in our school to personalize their education. As the innovation specialist, I have the unique role of being able to help students and teachers use their technology. Whether it's a student coming into the makerspace to create a prototype for an engineering project, or helping a teacher that wants to incorporate robotics and programming into their curriculum, my job is to connect the two worlds of education and technology. The students here with me today are representing all of the students in our school. Their projects and stories are just a snapshot of what is happening within our walls around technology and personalized learning. These students will be telling you all about their specific projects. I'd like to invite Amelia up to come and tell us all about our school's one-to-one Chromebook program and how she uses her Chromebook throughout the day.
Technology is part of our school's culture. When going to class or a meeting, we all have our devices. We even dedicate an entire day in December to learning computer coding called Day of Code, which Annabelle will be talking about later. In our classrooms, technology is constantly expected, integrated, and connected. Every student has a Chromebook, starting in first grade with a touchscreen Chromebook. At the end of eighth grade, we get to keep them and bring them to us with high school. We use these all around the school in different classes. In writing, we work on collaborating stories together in Google Drive. In art, we have them to design projects for the 3D printer. And in reading, we use them to do research for our book projects. Our access to technology has created a unique experience for us and provided us with individualization that we would never had otherwise. Every student starting in our school has electronic portfolio, or a PLP. PLP stands for Personalized Learning Plan. This e-portfolio showcases our learning and reflections throughout the year. We use our Chromebooks to put new information into our PLPs. I like to take pictures of my best work and write reflections to show my learning. In the slideshows, you can see I took a picture of my book project for Because of Winn-Dixie. I made a board game and I chose to use this project as evidence for self-direction because I worked on this project all by myself until it was finished. Every year, we also get to write about what we want to be when we grow up. It's really cool that I can look back in my third grade portfolio and see that even then I wanted to be a doctor. Having access to our Chromebooks throughout the day makes using our PLPs and documenting our learning much easier. Our reflections and evidence can be stored digitally and will stay with me through high school. This is much more reliable than a binder or report card. I use my Chromebook every day in all of my subjects. During writing class, we write stories in Google Docs. I like to use the Chromebook to do this because it has spell check. If I don't have spell check, I would spell a lot of words wrong. I like that we can personalize our stories by choosing colors and fonts. Whenever we are finished writing, we get to share our stories with our teachers. I like to check my stories to see what comments my teachers have made. If I need to fix something, I can fix it and then resolve the issue in my teacher's comment. During reading class on Fridays, we get to do some leisure reading on our Chromebooks. During leisure reading, we get to listen to stories. It's really calming to listen to stories being read, and it's a little bit easier because then I'm not reading the words wrong or worry that I'm reading them wrong. I just get to enjoy the story. In math, we use our Chromebooks to practice math facts such as addition, subtraction, fractions, and decimals, and a lot of other things. It's more exciting to practice these facts using technology than flashcards. My favorite thing to do on my Chromebook is Typing Club. Typing Club is a program where we learn how to use our Chromebook's keyboards. We get to learn how to type correctly and without looking at our keyboard. I really like that I can compete against my classmates and I can see how well I'm doing within the program. It can tell me how accurate I was and how fast I'm typing. When I learn how to type faster, I will be able to write stories and ideas down faster. I think school would be horrible without Chromebooks. Everything we do in the school we use computers. When I grow up, I want to be a doctor. Doctors use computers a lot to look up patient records and information. If I continue to use technology during school, it is going to help me succeed later in life. Now I'd like to ask Annabelle to come up. She will be talking about stewardship projects and her experience with programming and coding.
As you saw in our St. Albans City School video, stewardship is a required part of our school. Each of the 13 learning communities at our school are required to have a stewardship project or several. This project needs to be a service or for our school or community.
On the first Wednesday in June, we all come together to celebrate our work and share our stories. We all wear a t-shirt designed by a 7th or 8th grade student. We enjoy a local for lunch. We all get to school on our own power. We run workshops and a school-wide assembly to share our work over the year. At our school-wide assembly, every team collaborates in a Google Slide presentation to showcase our projects using pictures and videos to show what we have accomplished throughout the year. I presented for my team 3 years in a row. My first year presenting was in first grade. This was my first experience speaking in front of a crowd. Now I'm a lead actress in our school's most recent drama production, and our first performance is actually tomorrow. In the video, you saw the pollinator gardens. This is the Travelers Team stewardship project. We had to do a lot of work to get our pollinator gardens ready. We had to do a lot of weeding and planting. We also had to do a lot of problem solving because our gardens are located in the school's parking lot and they kept getting trampled. We ended up putting in wood barriers down the middle to keep people from walking across our plants. The pollinator garden wasn't our only project. We also had pet bees. Throughout this project, we had to learn more about our bees and how we can keep them healthy. Unfortunately, our beehive didn't survive. There was a lot of construction happening at the time, and our bees never returned to the hive. We used technology to learn more about bees and how they behave. Bees do a waggle dance to direct other bees to flowers where the most pollen are. At our school, we have BeeBot. We program BeeBot to do a waggle dance of its own by pressing the arrows on the top of BeeBot's body. This was my first experience programming a robot. Since then, I've learned how to program using block programming on my iPads and Chromebook. Every year, our school participates in the Hour of Code, which is a movement to get more people learning how to code and program. Our school takes it to the next level. We have a whole day of code. This actually just happened last week. During that day, I got to participate in plugged and unplugged activities. Plugged activities required a device of some sort, while unplugged activities required no devices at all. This year, I got to make a binary code beaded necklace. I had to change my initials into binary code, and each color stood for either a 0 or a 1. I was also able to participate in a Minecraft educational workshop with one of our music teachers. I've never experienced Minecraft before, and I didn't realize that it could be educational. I built a whole underground world. It was really cool. When I was in third grade, I got to make a Soraban, which is a Japanese abacus. You can see me in the picture putting it together. I always get excited when Day of Code comes around because I know I'm going to be learning some new things about programming and coding. Coding and programming at St. Albans City School is not only limited to our one day of code a year. When I was in kindergarten all the way to third grade, I went to STEAM class once a week for 45 minutes. STEAM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, Arts, and Mathematics. During STEAM class, we learned a lot about programming and coding. On our Chromebooks, we used Code.org and Scratch Junior to learn more about programming. We also programmed robots. That's a picture of me in second grade with Dash. Once we learned how to program, we started programming in math class to make symmetrical shapes using code on a program from the Hour of Code website. Learning how to program and code has helped me express my creativity. When I'm coding, I can bring things to life, whether it's a statue that I turn into a robot or a drawing I turn into a cartoon. I want to be a surgeon when I get older, and I think that my experience with programming and robotics is going to help me achieve my goals. Now I'd like to invite up Elliot and Duffy, who will tell us about their experience helping with the College Week event.
This year, we are starting a new tradition in December, College Weeks. College Weeks will take place the last 2 weeks before December break. Our school started this tradition this year in order to help every member of our school family experience a culture of college.
During these weeks, weeks, each of our learning communities have adopted a college. They are learning about their college, creating a banner, decorating their team door, and on December 21st, they will enter a series of competitions at a school-wide assembly as their college.
We have bulletin boards up that show where the adults in our school family went to school. We will also have a featured school every morning presented on our daily announcements. This feature is a video done by students.
This is our first year starting this tradition, and one we are excited about. It helps each of the members of our school family understand that their future is in their hands.
We were excited to have a special role in this event. Ms. Boris came to ask us if we would be willing to come down to the Makerspace and create trophies for the winners of each contest. We had never worked in the Makerspace before, and we were excited to learn about the tools. We were especially interested in the 3D printing.
The Makerspace is located in the middle of our school, attached to the library. There are a lot of different tools in the Makerspace, like 3D printers, laser cutters, vinyl cutters, robotics, and circuitry. Mrs. Borst asked us to help her make trophies, and we got to pick which tool we would want to learn to make them. We chose the 3D printer.
We started learning how to design in a program called Tinkercad on our Chromebooks. I had never used it before, so we had to go through and learn by doing tutorials. While I was doing them, I got the idea of creating my own model car, and I really hoped that I was going to have time while I was working on the project to create that as well, and I did.
3D designing and printing is not nearly as easy as I thought it was going to be. It was actually really frustrating. I kept thinking that stuff I was making was correct, and when I brought it into the software to print it, letters were floating. But I stuck with it, and I kept going, and actually started using it for one of my classes. We are doing a government project in my classroom, and I was excited to see that part of the project involved making a 3D model of a government building. So I chose to be in that group. And I get to come down to the Makerspace at other times now, too, to work on my government project, 3D, my 3D design of St. Albans City Hall.
When we first started thinking about our trophies, we wanted to see some examples, so we had to walk upstairs to the display case where all of our school's trophies are held. We noticed that they all had some common features. A rectangular base with some words, a column, and some sort of unique figure on top, depending on what the trophy was for.
It was hard to picture what we would have to do in order to make a 3D printed trophy that looked like that. Mrs. Borst asked us to try to see what kinds of shapes we could find in the trophy. We noticed the bottom was a rectangular and the column looked like a sphere or a polygon that was stretched, and the design on top could be whatever we wanted it to be.
From there, we created a prototype from a base. We wanted to make the trophy in two pieces so it would be better printed. In the picture, you can see our prototypes. We decided to go Duffy's trophy size because it would take 4 hours like mine did. After that, we created the tops for the trophies. You can see one printing for Dartmouth College.
I like learning how to use a 3D printer. I would like to create some stuff for myself after this project is done. When I get older, I want to be a professional hockey player and maybe win the Stanley Cup.
I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I know that I want to go to college, though. Now we are going to pass it over to Mackenzie, who is going to talk about how she has taken action to reduce waste in our community.
In class, we have been learning about government and the three branches. We learned about the First Amendment and the right to petition. Our teacher had this great idea that we should each make our own petitions. One of our rights as citizens is the right to petition. I decided I wanted to make a petition on getting rid of straws in St. Albans, Vermont. I wanted to get rid of straws to help the environment and animals. It's been a big problem for a while now. I wanted to research about our uses of straws in the last 10 years. I was inspired by the movie A Plastic Ocean, and after watching that, I found a TEDx video with a 9-year-old girl, Molly Steer, talking about how bad plastic straws are and what they are doing for our planet. We have used more plastic in the last decade than we have in the last century. I decided that I needed to help and make a change, so I started with my school community. My first step was to create my petition. I went around asking for signatures. I started out with kids in my class and team. And then I expanded to teachers within my school community. I haven't gotten all the teachers yet, but I plan on getting a few more. I have gotten 45 signatures, and my goal is to get 200. I plan on going around in the community to get signatures from my neighbors and other community members. I've been working on a slideshow to present to the city to the St. Albans City Council. I will be presenting sometime in January. The Makerspace has helped me with my project by creating stickers that I can give out to raise awareness and help me get more signatures. I designed the stickers by myself on the computer. I used the vinyl cutter to cut out the stickers on large sheets of vinyl. I had to weed the stickers. Weeding is when you use a special tool to take out all of the parts you don't want. Just like weeding a garden, you take out all the plant you don't want. I had to take out all the sticker pieces I didn't want anymore. This was a tricky project because I wanted to make a sticker that would come off and stick to something all in one piece. I used a stencil font to create text that was all connected. We created a prototype first to see if the sticker would come off in a full piece. Once it was weeded, the first prototype had some letters that were too small, and it made it really hard to read. It took me a lot longer to get the pieces up, so I went into the design and made the text larger and cut it out again. This made it much easier to read, and it looked much better. I wanted to start with 60 stickers, and I know that since I've created the design on the computer, I can always go back and make more. I wanted to create a website so that more people could learn about my petition and be informed about how plastic is affecting our environment. It was really hard to create my site, and it still doesn't look exactly how I had pictured it, but it's beautiful all the same. I am hoping to add more pictures and get more people to go on it soon. I've learned how to use a vinyl cutter and about what the Makerspace has to offer. It has opened my mind to what I can do to help the environment and make change. I want to help keep the environment clean and help living creatures. This project has benefited me in so many different ways. Even though I'm only in sixth grade, I know I can make a difference. When I grow up, I want to be an actress. My school has supported me and given me the tools and opportunity to make this happen. Now I'm going to invite Alexis, and she is going to tell us about her community service project.
These are pictures of my pets. I love animals and taking care of them. Last year, my friend Ellie and I heard that our local Humane Society closed, and we really wanted to help get it open again. Ellie had a bunch of gems and magnets, so we had the idea to start a fundraiser. We started selling magnets last spring, and then we had a big garage sale, and some of the proceeds went towards our fundraiser. While the garage sale was going on, we also had a big sale. We raised about $35, and we were really proud. We want to raise a larger amount of money so we can give it all to the Humane Society at once. Our goal is 100. We are at about 50. We noticed when we were going to stores they had 3D items. We knew that we had a 3D printer in the Makerspace at our school. If we used the school's 3D printer, we could create a consistent, high-quality keychain or magnet that we could sell for a little more and get a little more of a profit for the Humane Society. Since we started designing, we have created 4 different keychain designs. We did a lot of math to figure out the cost of filament so we could see how much we should charge for our keychains in order to make a profit. We had to figure out how much filament was used for each keychain and divide that by the cost of the total roll of filament. We figured out that one of our keychains only cost 2 cents, which was great because we only want to charge $1 for our keychains. This meant that we had 98 cents as a profit to donate to the Humane Society. I thought that everything would be really hard and that we really wouldn't be able to do it, but I was pleasantly surprised. First, we had to learn how to use Tinkercad, which is a free online 3D design program. Once we went through all the tutorials, we designed our own pet theme product line. First, the first one we made was supposed to be a paw print made out of diamonds shapes, but it failed and only one diamond printed. That was sad, but we realized this diamond shape doesn't work very well for what we were trying to do. So I created another 3D prototype. It was a heart and it said, "I heart animals." That one printed perfectly, but the size was way too big for a keychain. We really wanted to sell our keychains and magnets at our local veterinarian offices. We thought about this location because this is where pets would go if they were hurt or they needed help. We thought that if they help sick animals, they might be willing to help out with our fundraiser for the Humane Society. We wrote a persuasive letter to the Veterinarian Center in St. Albans and in Melton. Sadly, we never heard back from the St. Albans Vet Center, but we heard back from the one in Melton, and they said yes. They want us to create a small display to showcase our products, and they would have it out at the front desk for people to look at. We had offered to give the vet office 20% of our profits for hosting our display, but they said that they didn't want it because we've been working hard and doing a good thing. This made us really happy and we were really excited. Along with trying to sell our products at the vet offices, we wrote a letter to Humane Society to tell them about our fundraiser and our mission. They had already opened back up and they wanted to see our prototypes. So I brought them a prototype. They thought that it was awesome and we should keep up the good work. This experience has taught me a lot. I have learned that there is a lot of technology out there that can help do a lot of different things. I can create things just for myself, or I can create things to make a change. Our teachers are willing to be flexible so we can use school time to work on our projects that we are passionate about. They are all for it. Now that I have been in Makerspace, I can see myself coming in to use tools for other projects in school. I just learned how to use the vinyl cutter to create a sticker to raise more awareness. This is one of the stickers that we made. When I grow up, I want to be a veterinarian, and I want to open my own vet office. Starting my own fundraiser has given me experience about what it's like starting from nothing and watching it grow. Thank you very much. Ms. Borse is going to come up and tell us a little more about our school's makerspace.
Nope. Having a dedicated makerspace in our school has been really important for fostering personalized learning. We're in the fifth year of this process and have been working out to get a system that works to get students in. One of the most effective things we have implemented has been an open lab time. Open lab time is when students can come in and sign up to go into the makerspace and work on projects that they're passionate about. These times are open to all ages from pre-K to eighth grade, and we've had first graders all the way up to eighth graders working together at these times. This is one of the most powerful ways for students to learn. We've had first graders that have learned how to use the 3D printers and have actually taught seventh graders who have come in how to use the software, turn the 3D printer on, get the filament in, and start printing. This ability to become a leader, no matter what the age is a great experience for all of our students. One of the biggest learning curves for students coming into the makerspace has been realizing the amount of time it takes to make anything, especially when you're doing it from conception to the prototyping, and then trying to actually get a finished product after that. But this has also been what has hooked many of our students. They come in to start one project, they have one idea, and they stick around because they figure out all of the other possibilities that they can use the makerspace for, and they keep coming back. Not only do they come back, but then they start bringing all of their friends in too. So much so that we've had to expand some of our open lab times to incorporate recess times. So we have a good amount of teams that are now sending kids 6 or 7 to the makerspace during recess. The best part of my job is seeing students' faces light up when they finish a project that they've been working on for weeks and weeks, and then to finally have something to go home with or to go back to their teachers with. So we hope that we've inspired you to provide students the opportunity to pursue their personal passions, and that you can see how passionate our students are and how passionate I am about technology and implementing that in an educational setting. So right now, I'm going to open up the floor to some questions. I've been getting some on my phone from Christine as we've been going, so I'm going to try to field these to some of the kids, and I might answer some of them as well. So the first question we've gotten is, how have programs like the Makerspace impacted your education? Mackenzie, you want to come up and talk about it? So how has these types of projects impacted your education?
These types of projects have impacted my education because now I know that I can make a difference and I can go back and solve a new problem and help with more stuff, I guess. And I can make new things that I never could before.
All right. Thank you, Mackenzie. Another question is about the college days and what that entails. So somebody asked, do teachers present about their own colleges, and will there be different colleges chosen next year? So we have all of the teams have chosen a different college. We have a lot of teachers wearing their college gear this week and next week, and teachers that have brought in banners and diplomas and their cap and gown, and so they're really modeling that for our students. On the door displays, there's a lot of garb. I don't know. They have like banners and sashes and all sorts of stuff decorating them. And then as for different colleges chosen next year, I'm not sure. I think we're sticking with the same colleges, and then we're just going to continue learning more about each college and what they have to offer. So this is kind of our introduction year. And next year we hope to maybe delve into what kind of majors are popular at those colleges and that kind of stuff. A question for the students. So there's a question somebody asked, why do you think students have a stick with it attitude? Would somebody like to come up and talk about that? Amelia, you want to come up? So why do you think students have a stick-with-it attitude, like not willing to give up?
I think it's mostly because of technology, because even when it gets hard, they know there's going to be fun things after it. Like different from if we had paper, I bet a lot of students would give up easier, but now that we have technology that we can use, students aren't giving up.
All right. Thank you, Amelia. Anybody else have a different answer for that question? Mackenzie?
I think students have a stick-with-it attitude because they know they can always go back to the design or prototype and try again and try something different and program differently and see other things they can do or other opportunities they can make happen.
Anyone else? So my perspective as an educator and looking at all of the different ages of students, I've noticed that a lot of our younger students have a real stick with it attitude because they are not afraid of failure. They try something, it doesn't work. They try something else, it doesn't work. They just keep trying. And so I think as we get older, we often feel afraid to fail, whereas kids, I think, are okay with that, knowing that they're going to figure it out and that they have the tools to figure it out. One of the questions that just came in was to explain how the open lab times work and do students miss class to go to the makerspace? So that's a great question. So our open lab times, we have a makerspace website and we have like a shared spreadsheet. So it's available to all of the teachers and the students. It's under the understanding that they come to open lab with the permission of their teacher. And a lot of the time they are missing class to be there, which is why we started doing it during recess times too, because it's hard for students to miss, you know, math or reading or writing. But a lot of our teachers are super flexible and know that that might be something that that kid needs. And so they're willing to give them up for that subject so that they can come and learn maybe a similar thing, just in a different environment. Let's see. Does anyone want to come up and share anything about their PLPs? So your e-portfolios, Alexis?
On our POPs, I've noticed that quite a bit we talk about what we've done in school. Like, if we go on a field trip or something, we always say what was our favorite part about it, what was something that you would want to change or something like that. And also on it, we think about what we want to be when we grow up, what's a problem we want to change in the world, and those are like the main things that we talk about a lot because they make a difference with who people think we are and who we actually are.
Hello? So like Alexis was saying, we can put how we think that we're doing in our academic classes, and then our teachers actually write a paragraph or two about how we're doing and stuff. And actually, your parents can like put hopes and dreams for you late for later on in the year and put that in your PLP.
Mackenzie? I have noticed over the years, our teachers make us reflect on almost everything we do. If we write a sentence, we have to reflect on it. If we write a story, we have to reflect on it. So it has impacted us in many different ways, because as we grow older, we can go back and look and see what we want to grow up, what problems we wanted to fix, what sentence we wrote, what field trips we went on. And we can remember and tell future generations of everything that we do at this school.
Thank you, Mackenzie. Amelia?
My favorite thing to do on my portfolio with my friends is that we look back at our first and kindergarten pictures and compare them to us now. Sometimes they're really funny pictures, sometimes they're serious faces, and we also compare our writing to each other, which I think is really cool, so you can see how you've grown from when you were in kindergarten to when you're in fifth and sixth grade and stuff. So, yeah.
Do you notice that you have more handwritten things when you were younger?
Yes.
So you could see what your handwriting was like.
Yeah.
And now do you mostly type into your portfolios?
Yeah, back when we were in kindergarten, we did like a lot of handwriting, which I don't know how, I can't read it now. I don't understand it.
All right, thank you. Do you guys want to share anything? Elliot, you want to come on up?
I think our e-portfolios are really cool because in 20 years, we can look back at everything we've done in school to see what we
we're bad at, good at. And looking at the pictures, looking at our handwriting, looking at our skills.
What's the earliest picture that you have in yours?
Probably our team triumph picture. I don't know.
Do you have any from first, second, and third grade?
Yeah, I don't know where they are, though.
Oh, well, I guess I'm going to have to show you because I was your first grade teacher, Elliot. Duffy, you want to share anything? No? Okay. So somebody asked more about the PLP process from the teacher perspective. So this is a process that we've been going through for a long time, going from report cards to electronic portfolios. And it's been a long process, and we finally have something that's a consistent thing from student to student. So it's a template that starts out in pre-K. So it starts with an About Me in pre-K and some other basic things, just some information about the students. And when they get into kindergarten, they start having to actually reflect on some of the transferable skills in Vermont. So the transferable skills are things that students need to be able to do to make them successful in the world. And it's something that the state of Vermont has adapted. And so we start it at a very young age. So they really don't have to be doing it until ninth grade, but we figured the longer they, or the earlier they're reflecting and practicing the skill, the better that they will be at it. And so this looks different in all of the grades. The younger grades are not logging onto computers and typing in their goals and their reflections. A lot of teachers are taking videos of the kids. So when I was a first grade teacher doing this, I would take videos of my students and they would tell me about themselves. We would look at work that they've done and they'd pick something out that represented the transferable skills and we'd do a voice recording or a video telling us about that. So it's exciting and cool to see as the kids have gotten older now that we have had the same template for 3 or 4 years now, kids can really start to look back and see what they've done. And it's fun to go back and reflect with them because they look at their kindergarten pictures and they kind of giggle a little bit because they're like, oh my gosh, I was so little, I was so cute. And that's, you know, 3 years ago. So imagine when they're seniors in high school and they're going back that long and looking at all of that stuff. So from a teacher's perspective, it's a lot of work. But when you see the looks on their faces and you know that this is something that's captured digitally and will last, it's worth a lot of that work. Let's see if there's any other questions. Somebody asked about the reactions teachers had from report cards to e-portfolios. I think it was kind of gradual enough that we did a little bit at a time. So the teachers got used to a little bit at a time, and then we jumped right in. And I think part of my biggest role as the innovation specialist is helping teachers with that process. So going in and co-teaching with them and getting their students to do it a little more independently. And that's something that we've been trying in the last couple of years. Somebody asked, do we have regular report cards too? So we have the e-portfolios, and we have certain standards that students need to make, and we have tests that we do to make sure students are on grade level, but we don't have any other formal report card that we send home with kids. So parents are able to log in and see all of their students' stuff within their e-portfolios. Do you guys have anything else you want to add? Nothing? Mackenzie, come on up. All right, last one, Mackenzie.
Asking about the report card things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to add something to the report card things. I think the fact that we don't have report cards makes life like a whole bunch easier because if you give a report card to a first grader, most likely their backpack will ruin it because there's a bunch of random stuff in there. So, and then you take it home and like your parents can't read it because it's all ripped up, but on technology, you like they can look at it at home and see what their kids are doing, and they can't, like, it's not ruined because they put it in their backpack. And it, like, some people, like, they forget to give it to their parents. It's like the last thing they do. Then, yeah.
All right, thank you.
All right, so
I know we have to stop. Sorry.
Thank you so much for attending our webinar. I'd like to pass it over to Christine, and she will finish up for us.
Hi. Well, thank you, and excellent job to all the students. I wanted to share what I'm drinking from today, which is a lovely cup that is the product of the Makerspace at St. Albans City Schools. So I was proud to work with your principal, Joan Cavallo, as well as Ms. Borst, and all the other students that came in November, and very proud of all of your work today and all of the information you were able to share. So we learned new things about your school and all the new opportunities and the breadth of how many students are really dedicated to learning and having that ownership of their learning. So wonderful job. And I'd like to thank the administrators and teachers, because we know this took an incredible amount of timing and planning as well. So again, thank you for attending today. EdWeb will post in the chat, but we'd love your evaluation of this Ed webinar. We like to be able to look at the information and always improve. I'd like to thank EdWeb for hosting this event. It's always great to be able to spread the news about great things happening in schools with students. So once again, please know that all of the resources are available on EdWeb in the Student Voice community. So you can access the slide deck, the recording, some of the links, and then you can also view other webinars that were focused on Student Voice, and you can also then engage with other leaders. So you had a ton of compliments in the chat here, and hopefully the students will all get to see that in the future. And to everyone, have a wonderful holiday season and a happy new year.
Thank you.
We can see them. It's great to see everyone's face. So great. Have a good afternoon.
Great job.
Thank you. Bye. We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.